Well, this morning, as you can see with all the chairs up here, we're not interviewing one, not two, but a whole bunch of people. And part of the reason we're doing this morning is because there are all kinds of ways to be parents in the non-traditional kind of biological sense. And we have a bunch of people that we love at this church that have been a part of different ways of parenting and loving kids. And so if you're part of my panel discussion, would you come on up at this time and find a good spot, a good stool? All right, thank you guys. All right. Well, a good-looking crew, don't you think? Yeah? All right. Well, as you guys know, it's a little nerve-wracking to get up and talk in front of people at any time. But to talk about things that are very kind of near and dear to your heart, that's even a little bit tougher. So thank you guys for helping us think through these things. And so what we want to do is we want to explore a little bit some ways of parenting through adoption, through foster care, through respite care. And each of these up here are in various stages or have been in various stages of one or more of those parenting ways. And so we're going to hear a little bit of their stories, and I'm just going to let them tell you a little bit about what the journey that God has taken them on. So we're going to start right here in the middle with Ruanne. It's a good place to start. It is. It is. Yeah, I forgot to give you guys microphones. That may help a little bit. So we're going to start with Ruanne because I'm sure she'll be the shortest. Yeah. All right, let me distribute these. We're going to have to do a little bit of sharing. All right.
We're married. That's what we're supposed to do.
There we go. I'll just pass that. Okay. Now we'll restart. Ruanne, just tell us about your journey here with fostering and adoption.
My biggest fear is I was going to have to follow Stephanie because you don't follow babies or puppies. It just doesn't work. So thank you for letting me start. My journey started basically back when my folks started fostering. We ended up having at one time 34 children living in our home at one time. There were so many of them, we lived in an old nursing home. And so it's been a long journey, and then I'm blessed with a wonderful job called CASA, and I see firsthand the number of children that come through and don't have any parents. Last year, we represented about 150 kids abused and neglected, and there's always about 25 or 30 on the wait list hoping to get a CASA. So Ron and I briefly started talking about wanting to be an active part of this, and we filled out the application, and believe it or not, we passed. And so we were blessed to have four children that we adopted.
Very good. Let me introduce everybody, just because I don't want to assume that everybody knows everybody up here. On my far left, we have Jason and Elizabeth Baker, Catherine Peterson, Ruanne Root, Stephen Diana Hansen, and Stephanie Shade. I should have started there. Well, Ruanne, as I think about fostering a little bit, there are obviously some major challenges to both the fostering side and the adoption side. And one that you and I talked about is how sometimes you can feel judged by other people because of the children that are living with you, whether they're foster or adoption. Have you ever felt that? And could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the children that you or that we had in our home came from a background of a lot of trauma. And you don't necessarily parent them the same way you do your biological children. For instance, like for our kids, we could put them in a timeout in their room, but some of the children that we fostered, you can't time them out necessarily in their room because they're used to being left alone for long periods of time. And so you have to think of creative ways outside of the box. And if you have somebody that hasn't had that kind of experience and knowing what works and what doesn't work, they're real quick to say, well, if they were my children, I would do it this way, you know, kind of thing. And until they are your children, you just don't know.
Yeah. So what recommendations would you have for us then for anybody who's parenting? Obviously, you parent according to the child. But as you've learned about parenting from multiple angles over the years, what recommendations would you have for those that are maybe struggling a little bit with the parenting process?
I think we've all struggled with parenting one time or another, and if you said you haven't, you're lying, or spend more time with your kids because you will get frustrated with them. And basically, for me and my parenting, I cleaved to Psalms 46:10, be still and know that I am God. I believe that God had a master plan for every single child in my home, and it was being able to trust in that, turn it over to him, and know that he even loves my children more than I do, and I find that hard to believe, but he does. And having faith and confidence that he won't waste one hurt, that it'll turn it around for his glory if we just turn it over to him.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much. I'll go over here to the Bakers on the far left. We have three in a row here that are in the midst of current of fostering. So thanks so much for being willing to share. And just tell us about your journey over these last months.
Well, I prepared a written statement so I wouldn't forget. So our journey has been long. It's amazing. But when we first did respite for our foster daughter, because when they're in the foster system, you can't really talk about their names or the case. But with all the medical issues that she has, she's a fighter, and we just can't say it. It's a long, tiring, but it's eye-opening, everything that we see, everything that we've experienced. It just kind of opens your eye to the system of, you know, what we see that needs to be fixed, and so, you know, all that good stuff.
So now your process is a little bit different. It began with respite, mm-hmm. and what's next for you guys?
We're hoping adoption. There's another court hearing coming up in a couple months where we find out the permanency hearing and all that.
Yeah. And was that the original intent at the beginning?
Well, we started doing foster care a couple years ago. We had three teenagers in the house all at once with our teenager, and that was pretty rough. That's the same year she decided to be a stay-at-home mom and homeschool the boys. So it was rough at first, and then we went on vacation, decided that teenagers weren't our thing. So I decided to listen to my wife and go to the nice little cuddly little baby route. So
yeah. Yeah, and we've seen you guys walking around with her, and she is cute. I'm talking about the baby and your wife, I guess, at that point. I got to be careful about my pronouns here a little bit.
Amazing.
So tell us about maybe one obstacle that you guys have run into through this process over the last maybe year or two that maybe would be a surprise to us to know.
Yeah, you told me to keep it positive. So.
That's a hard question. I've given a lot of thought to how I could answer this. It is a very frustrating being in the midst of it. However, if you need to be challenged that you are not in control and God is in control, this is where you should be. There's a lot of obstacles that we didn't know. If I wish somebody would have told us in the beginning how, I don't know the right word to say, but how strongly the state feels about reuniting biological parents and foster children. I wish we kind of would have known that going into it, because it is frustrating. Our level of what we think is acceptable as parenting is not the state's level. So being able to parent, you know, drunk or high, those sorts of things, is really, really difficult for us. And I think what we have, you know, the new initiative as Christians of stepping in before the state gets involved, we're really interested in that, so that we don't have to answer to the state and those sorts of levels of care, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So what, part of what you're saying is that the interaction with the state and the social workers and all of those isn't always the easiest process. Maybe that'd be a good way of saying it. Okay. All right. Well, let's go to Catherine here. Catherine, you're in the midst of a moment that maybe a year ago you wouldn't have guessed that you'd be in. James, these are coming through the monitor. I think that's where the feedback is. So tell us about your journey over these last couple months.
Yeah, so I have been a teacher now. This is my fourth year, and this is my first year of teaching without having my oldest foster child as a student. So I knew her for a really long time, and at the beginning of June summer school, we were seeing some spotty attendance, and I'd heard some things, and I was thinking, oh, they might be in a transition. So I got in touch with the caseworker, and they're like, yeah, we're looking for a placement. And I had her sister in Awana this last year, so we kind of built a relationship with them and thought, maybe this is our time. We just moved to a two-bedroom townhome, and so we said, okay, we'll make sure that they have a place to be until we find the good forever family so that they don't feel rushed into just finding something, that they're finding the best thing.
So who's living with you now?
We have Natalia and Cassandra.
Two beautiful little girls.
They are 11 and 14, and yeah, get to go to school with them every day.
Very great. So let me ask you a similar question. What's, you know, in this process, you guys have done a kind of atypical path. You didn't sign up for foster care and then go through the whole process. So for you, what is one obstacle that maybe you never would have guessed would have been a part of this process?
I guess I didn't realize how much time I spend outside of my regular school day doing other school activities and required activities. So one obstacle has just kind of been finding childcare for those extra times that I didn't realize I was going out and doing things quite as much as I was, and now finding childcare for some of those times has been a little bit of an obstacle.
Yeah, and so what's one misconception that you have about fostering and having foster children?
Yeah, so I used to think you either had to be a biological relative or you had to be a licensed foster parent in order to have kids in your home, but apparently there's a category of foster care known as kinship, and so that includes anybody who's had a relationship with the kid. It could be teachers, it could be Awana teachers, it could be just people that are part of their life already is a preference over what they call a stranger home, so that the kids already have that relationship and it's slightly less traumatic just because they have a foundation there already. And I didn't even know that was an option until I was like, okay, what's next? Caseworker, like, where are they going? And they're like, well, how about you?
So you're in. Thanks for that story. We'll move over here to Steve and Diana. Wait to hear this. How many foster children have you guys had in your house over the years?
330-some.
Can you believe that? That is a big number. That's a lot. And
it took us 18 years to do that, though.
Yeah,
so it wasn't 1 month.
Only 18. Only 18 years. And I know you said that some of them were there for an afternoon, sometimes just for an hour, sometimes for a week. And so you guys have had a lot of kids that have come through over the years. And that's just, I think there are some people that are just uniquely gifted to do that kind of thing. I think there's probably a lot of people sitting out here going, I don't know if I could do that. And maybe initially you guys didn't think that either. But so what is one great thing and one difficult thing that you have found in this fostering care process?
The great thing is having the ability to tell people about Jesus. Every one of the kids that came through our house heard the gospel. Some responded and some we just planted seeds. We don't know where they are now or whatever, but that was a really good benefit of having that many kids in our home.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you can, when they come in, you have freedom to do that, right? And so there are churches that I know of that do foster care and adoption as an evangelism strategy for the church. Mm-hmm. Very interesting to think about that. Having kids in your home, sharing the gospel is just a method of sharing Christ. It's a fabulous thing. So what's something really maybe difficult or hard that you found through this process?
Nothing.
Nothing. It was all easy, I'm sure. And you guys adopted a few of them as they came through too, right? So what was something that maybe was difficult along the way?
I think the hardest for me was to let them go back home, to be able to see the parents that aren't changing, that still have hot UAs or still doing the same behaviors and going back to that.
Yeah, because it for whatever reason, God has given us a very quick ability to fall in love with the kid. I mean, you don't have to have that kid in your house very long before you really grow to love, and then to send them back to a situation that you think is just terrible, I'm sure that's very heart-wrenching.
And I think the other thing was, and it's a little tidbit of to help for church family, is that people would say, oh, I never could do that, I'd get attached. Well, we get attached, and it is hard, but you know, we're attached to our own biological children too, and we have to give them to the Lord and say, here you go, we did the best we could, and then now you're sending them off to college, or you're sending them, some of these kids back home. And so you just have to trust that God is in control and he will take care of them no matter what.
Yeah.
And some of the good things is we did see a lot of families coming to the Lord through the children.
Yeah, that's fabulous. That's a great story. Well, let's move to Stephanie. Is it best if Diana hold, or how do you think? All right, this is Stephanie Shade. Now, what's really interesting is that many of us have been praying for the Shades over just the last few weeks. So, introduce us to who is with you today.
This is Evan Daniel Shade.
All right. And how old is Evan Daniel?
He's 3 weeks.
3 weeks old.
Yeah.
So tell us about how did Evan come to be a part of your family?
Well, good morning, first of all. It's good to be back. Lots of faces I've missed seeing, so thank you for having me. So a lot of you know that Evan's our eighth child. Four of our other children we adopted out of foster care. So this is our first private adoption. And the way it came about is my husband Chris and I both, we each had the Lord speaking to us about adopting one more time. And when we finally talked to each other about it, we realized that he had been kind of had that on our hearts separately, and then kind of grew together. But our heart was to adopt a child with Down syndrome. And so at the end of July, we finished up all of the work that goes into that, and we filed our paperwork with the National Down Syndrome Adoption Network. And fast forward to Monday, September 10th, we received a call from them saying that there was a baby who had been born on September 6th, which was the Thursday, so this is the following Monday. His parents had relinquished him. He's in Pennsylvania. Are you interested? So we thought for 3, maybe 5 seconds and said, yeah, we'll do that. So packed up the kids, took them to grandma, got in the car on Wednesday night, drove 24 hours straight. We took turns in shifts so that we could get there by Friday to file the paperwork because we needed Pennsylvania to release us, and that process can take a while. When we got there, we talked with the worker at the adoption agency and found out a little bit more about the situation. So Evan's biological parents are from Egypt, and they still live in Egypt, and they were here in the United States in order to have him. And when he was born, they did not realize that he had Down syndrome. They didn't even know what Down syndrome was. The doctor shared his concerns. They spent the night researching it and realized that this was not a baby that they could take home. They were Muslim. Allah does not tolerate imperfection. This baby would have been reviled. He would have been a pariah in their society. Their family would have been ostracized. There would be no medical care. There would be no rehabilitative care. They just couldn't do it. And so when the adoption worker explained that in the United States, adoption is not a shameful thing, it's a celebrated thing, and that there actually would be people who not only would tolerate this baby, but who would want this baby, they felt peace about letting him go. And so they let him go, they returned home to Egypt, and they told their three children and their family that he died.
Hmm.
So, pray for them.
Well, that's quite a story. Welcome Evan to the family.
Yeah.
And well, so Evan would be your fifth adopted child. So what would be something, a great joy in adoption, or something you'd discovered in adoption that maybe would surprise us to hear?
Well, as I said, this is our first private adoption. Oh my goodness, adoption is a sanctifying experience, and it's a transformational experience. And our time's limited, so I won't go on forever. But I would say the thing that strikes me about this one, the arrow that is piercing my heart, is how we serve a God who will leave the 99 to go after the one. because when I think about the circumstances that he orchestrated to bring this baby here, where this baby can know Christ, where this baby can be raised in an environment that celebrates his life, I'm humbled. And, I think, but that's God. He's a God whose power is made perfect in our weakness, and he's a God who chooses the foolish things of the world to shame the wise and the weak things of the world to shame the strong. And he's the author of life and the creator of life and the sustainer of life, and he would do no less. And that strikes me, and I sit in awe of that every day.
Well said. Thank you for that. Well, I have two questions I want to ask all of you, so you might have to do a little bit of sharing the mic back and forth, but let's kind of switch into the education mode. Educate us out here about things to say and things not to say to people who are doing foster care or have adopted some children into their family. Just educate us, because we don't know, and we don't want to offend, but what should we say in our conversations with you?
When children come out of foster care, they come into an adoptive situation, that's always the plan B. It always is. As much as we celebrate having Evan here, that it's the plan B. One thing that foster parents and adoptive parents need the people around them to do is to be 100% supportive of them. Even if you privately, as we were talking about, you might privately disagree with maybe how they're handling things, but never in front of the children. Always, well, Dave, have you talked to your mom about that? What would your dad say about that? Always be supportive of them, because these children are, they're not fully attached. There's always that doubt, that mistrust, that, these people say this, but life has taught me differently. And so if we as a culture can just be 100% supportive and always work to cement that relationship, that's really helpful.
Good.
I'd say for kids who are in foster care, they haven't grown up in a family that has safe and loving boundaries. And so a lot of kids are learning that for the first time, and what are good boundaries, and what do I do with these new people that I'm meeting? And so a good way to start is handshakes and high fives. That's really important. And then, if the kid initiates something, of course, don't push them away. But handshakes and high fives are great, and anything else is good to ask permission. It's just a good boundary developing thing, so that they know, yes, I'm safe, and I build this trust before I, before I give someone a hug or something like that.
I would say a couple things. Don't ask us which one are our real children. They're all real. Latifa Tiana doesn't come blown up, and we put them away when we don't want them, and blow them back up when we want them out. Don't ask us how much money we get a month per child. We get that a lot because there's a belief out there that there are foster parents doing it for money. And while there might be a couple of them, the majority of us, I can speak for the ones here on the stage, that's not why we're doing it. And then the last one is, does it bother you that all the children don't look like you? Thank goodness they don't. That's the way I answer that. Michael would look terrible as a 50-year-old woman. I'm just saying. So those are some don'ts.
Another thing is, every one of you know what to do when somebody has a baby. Well, we're just getting new kids in our home. So take a meal over. Come over and just chat with the mom or clean house for her or something, because it's an adjustment to bring in children just in the middle of the night or 2 hours ago, and you have no clothes, you have nothing for them. So just take that in thought. And also, if you ever consider being a foster parent or a respite, one of the key things that we learned the hard way is you must find somebody to have respite. Take time, we're talking about marriage, take time for your marriage, because these kids will try to split you just like yours. They will try to find the thing that you don't agree on, and they'll try to split you. So you got to take at least a weekend, a month for each other.
Yeah. Ruan, can I come back to you just one more time? Because you and I talked.
I'm sorry. Too much.
It's my fault. For somebody who's adopted several, there's some terms not to use in reference to mom and family and children. Could you just kind of walk through those a little bit?
Yeah, you'll hear, like, when your kids, the foster children or some other people, they'll say the real parents. You know, what happens if the real parents want them back, or my kids will be my real mom, my real dad, and that just irks me, I will tell you, because I'm a real parent as well. I think real parents are the ones that are up with you at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're throwing up and taking you to baseball games, showing up for visitation and those kinds of things. So be real careful when you use the word real around me. I'm just saying.
Yeah. So the terms would be birth mother or biological?
Biological. Mm-hmm.
Okay, biological mother and mother.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But that'd be the best way?
Yep.
Okay. One last question. Maybe there's some people sitting out here that are thinking, you know what, I'd maybe like to explore respite care or foster care or maybe one of these kind of adoption situations where you start off with foster just to fall in love and then, you know, adopt. What are some things that maybe they haven't thought of that are maybe... You know, and the good side and the bad side, but what are some things that maybe they would need to think through or should know before they make that decision?
I will say get a support of people that will understand what it is that you're going through and will not judge you. The other thing that I can think of is inform yourself about trauma and the way that affects children. And I'll just give one real quick story that my two youngest ones would come in every day and check to see if Ron and I were in the bedroom. And one day they checked and Latifah came and poked at my eyes and lifted them up and asked if I was in there when I was asleep. And I said, yes, Latifah, I'm here. So then I heard her leave and she goes, don't worry, Tiana, Mom's still here. And my son, Jeremy, goes, of course Mom is here. Where else would she be? And that's the difference sometimes between a trauma child and a child that has not experienced that kind of trauma. The other thing, and I think Diane said that, is you got to learn to let go. If that's God's will, you got to learn to let go and let them go back to their biological homes, because no matter how bad those parents are, those children still love those parents. And it's hard sometimes for us to understand that. And then the last thing is, and this one was really hard for me, is pray for those biological parents as well. I know that it was really hard when they wouldn't come for visits or those kinds of things to pray for them, because I don't understand their story, I don't understand their trauma, but they too deserve the love of God. And if we can pray for them and minister with them through our children, we might touch and change their lives as well.
Yeah. Other things?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's, I mean, we can go through all this stuff. I think mostly we're doing it for God, because it says we're supposed to take care of the widows and the children. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that, you know, we've talked about. We're taking care of the kids as much as
we
can.
Yeah, some people say, you know, did you pray about it? And I don't know where I heard it. It might have been on my bridge, I don't know. But somebody was talking, and she said, you know, it's not something we have to pray about. It's commanded, you know, take care of the widows and the orphans. So did we pray about it?
We just said,
this is what we're supposed to do, so we'll do it.
Yeah. Good. Other thoughts?
Kind of based on what Ruan was saying, know your support group before you go into it, because you will maybe need a little bit more than you think you need. And I cannot express all of my thankfulness for the people that have helped us through this process and supported us and come over to our house so I can go to Interface and watch kids on professional development days, and brought us meals, and you know, sent encouraging text messages, and the list goes on and on, because it takes a village. And I send my girls to school every day, and I know they're in really good hands because I know they're teachers, and they come home and tell me, these teachers are believers, and these teachers encouraged me and answered my questions and things like that. So it absolutely takes a village. And so teachers, people who have friends, it doesn't have to be someone in your home all the time. It can just be a little thing here and there. But know your support group, because they are incredible. Hmm.
Well, thank you guys so much for sharing. I know it's not easy, but I think there's all kinds of misconceptions and stigmas. And I think it's really good, especially in the church family, to be able to talk about these things.